woods and waters of the Great Lakes State to the Michigan Talk Network. It's Wild Michigan with your host, Duran Martinez.
Welcome to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, your host all over the Great Lakes State on the Michigan Talk Network, our website, wildmichiganradio.com. And we're being brought to you by Lucky Buck Deer Minerals. Just saw their new facility down in Hillsdale, Michigan. My gosh, they are putting out the amount of product, running crazy because you guys are using it. And thank you so much for making Lucky Buck as popular as it is. I mean, the product, it sells itself, in my opinion. But right now, with this heat and everything going on, it's perfect antler growing season, much like we had last year. And of course, check the rules before you apply any of it out in your area. Okay, Michigan DNR has the baiting ban going on in the three counties of Ingham, Clinton, and Shiawassee County, which means no supplemental feeding or mineral or the like. But again, lucky-buck.com will have all that information. And thanks to our friends at Darton Archery as well, as we get ready for October 1st, which... It seems so strange because after October 1st, the rest of the year through April kind of goes really fast, and we're getting ready for bow season. Tom Nelson, host of the American Archer on the Outdoor Channel, joins me right now. Tom, you're a busy guy, and I actually got you to sit still for 5 minutes.
And I appreciate the break. Thank you, Duran. It's always a pleasure being on your show.
I'm thinking maybe you can put a fire under me as well because it's been hot. It's been miserable. I don't feel like talking about hunting or fishing because it's too hot to do any of them. But you're still, you've been on the road and you're getting ready to head out west for your trips there.
Yeah, all of the western states, a lot of them, well, California is already open for black-tailed deer. And, of course, the early archery antelope seasons across the west, such as in Wyoming, open the 15th of August and et cetera, et cetera. So it's time, and you know, I'm wound up, ready to go. And it's hard, you know, and you mentioned it's, you know, difficult to think about hunting season rolling around, especially when it's 90 degrees out. I mean, in Michigan here, we've had such a hot, dry summer. I can't remember the last time it's been this warm, but it makes it difficult to get out there and grab your bow and want to shoot it. You know, when it's hot, you've been working all day, you get home and, you know, who wants to sit out there in the backyard and fling arrows? But you got to remember, season's right around the corner.
You know, and you bring up a very good point about practice being so important. And this is where the motivational talk will come in, because a couple of weeks ago we spoke to our good friend Doug Roberts, the deer professor from Conquest Sense. Doug knows that with this kind of heat and that kind of pressure going on these deer, their cooling systems are their ears and their antlers, with all the blood being coursed through there. So a lot of antler growth going on right now, and maybe if you're setting your trail cams out, now is kind of the time to really get excited about October.
You know, it really is, and it's fun. I mean, I've had my trail cameras out since June, and actually, no, excuse me, because we had them out before Memorial Weekend, so back in May, but it's just amazing to watch the amount of growth these bucks are putting on as far as in their antlers and as far as the development. And it's so fun, you know, to watch them grow and to see how they progress, and to do an inventory of what bucks are available and on the move in your area.
Now, will these same bucks be there around the first part? I mean, the first part of
great
season.
Great question. Yes and no. They generally are around, you know, the first part of the season, perhaps. But they're in bachelor bands right now. They're also living in a very small core area. You know, every mm-hmm. deer, whether it's a doe or buck, has a core area that they do spend 90% of their time in. But they're very protective of their antlers because they're so sensitive. They don't want to damage them. They kind of hang low, you know, and stay in a very little area and with other bucks. But as their horns, antlers harden and such, and fall rolls around, and I shouldn't say fall, almost late summer, you know, September and things, they do begin to split up. And it's funny because oftentimes, Duran, I'll watch one particular buck in velvet that kind of keep an eye on, and you see him on a regular basis, whether you're watching with optics from afar or you're getting him on trail camera, and then he just flat disappears. And oftentimes that's because they leave their core area or move, or, you know, their antlers are hardening. And that whole transition period is generally when their antlers harden and everything gets out of whack, as far as if you're patterning that buck and watching them or seeing that bachelor band of bucks, they all kind of split up. So Some stay, some go. Every deer is a bit different.
You know, it's funny you should bring that up because Sarah Marie, my fiance, who will be my wife here in a couple of weeks. Oh, my gosh. You know, we talked about she was getting all excited about, you know, seeing bucks on the trail cams and whatnot, her first season hunting. I said, don't get too excited because we're probably not going to see them. And that was the case. So they go. I mean, they start making their patterns and they start changing things up and they start, you know, marking their territories and strengthening up their neck muscles and everything else. And it can be kind of disappointing to a new person.
You know, what you just said about how they, you know, start strengthening their necks and doing all this, that's part of it. And you know, and I think that they like to just flat leave that area that they've been in too much or go to another area that has more does or get away from those other bucks as far as competition or if there's bigger bucks in the area. And, you know, bucks have areas that they like to rut in, that they're only in those areas when they're rutting, and they have different areas, different zones they like to be in. And I'll say this, too. Here in Michigan, the last two bucks I've killed the last 2 years were both bucks I never saw before until, well, I shouldn't say it, the one I killed last year I saw a couple times prior, but never had any trail cam photos of either one of them all summer, all early fall, and then they showed up in October, late October, November, you know, and I guarantee you they came from a ways away, perhaps 3, 4, 5 miles. I mean, they'll travel that far, but historically they've always done it. But then again, I've had bucks that I've had pictures of all summer and see them on a regular basis in the fall that stay right there. So they're always, it's always interesting. But going back to what you said, it always seems like the big ones that you watch in the summertime are the ones that disappear and flat leave there, and you're just like, where did they go? Did they get hit by a car, or this happened, or did they get poached? But generally the cases, they just moved. And maybe all they did is moved on to the adjoining property.
Sure.
You know? So, and you think they disappear, so it's just part of the battle. But there's always that influx of new bucks coming into your area as fall progresses, especially during the rut, and that always makes it exciting. You just never know what's going to walk by you.
Tom Nelson, our guest here on Wild Michigan. He is the host of the American Archer on the Outdoor Channel. Tom, I'm going to ask you a couple of questions because one of them pertains to I had early trail cam photos of a buck that was very massive, had junk all over him. I mean, I was really getting excited, of course, never saw that one again. But when we see trail cam photos of them in velvet, maybe we get the same deer, but yet the mass, there's a lot of mass that they lose over the course of that time between, you know, shedding the velvet and the time we harvest them.
Absolutely. You know, when you see trail cam photos of a buck in velvet, it's kind of deceiving because, you know, their mass looks, again, as big as what it actually will be when it's hard-horned. Tines look longer. The whole rack in general looks more massive as far as circumference measurements and such. So sometimes when they lose that velvet, when they become hard-antlered, you look at them and you think, oh, I've never seen that buck before. But in reality, it's a buck you might have 50 trail cam photos of. So it does. It gives it a kind of a deceiving look when you look at them in velvet, and you're always adding inches to it, thinking, you know, that's a much bigger buck than perhaps it really is.
Yeah, speaking with Tom Nelson here on, Wild Michigan, our website, wildmichiganradio.com. Tom is on the Outdoor Channel. But you've been there how many years? I ask you this every time, and the number always just gets up, like, way more than I thought.
Yep, we're in our 20th year on the Outdoor Channel.
Wow.
This month, actually, Durant, August 20th year.
Congratulations, 20 years on the Outdoor Channel. And you know, that was just in its infancy almost, because now we've got like countless networks and 1,000 shows and everything else.
It very, very true. We were the very first archery only all bow hunting show on the Outdoor Channel.
That's awesome, man. It's still there. You can check him out. And again, we'll talk more with Tom when we come back and find out a little bit about cutting lanes and setting stands. See how we can do it and not be intrusive. It's Wild Michigan being brought to you by Darton Archery, Michigan's own, here on the Michigan Talk Network.
I still believe.
Hey, Michiganiacs, this is your blood brother Ted Nugent celebrating the almighty Michigan Spirit of the Wild with my blood brother Duran Martinez on Wild Michigan. Go Wild.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez. Just had conversation with Ted a couple of weeks ago. I'll put that up on the Wild Michigan page on our website, wildmichiganradio.com. And we've got the Wild Michigan TV page. Even though it was a radio interview, we had put it over to YouTube. So it's just Ted talking about his 60 years of rock and roll. Unbelievable. And you know, Tom, we talked about, speaking of Tom Nelson right now, host of the American Archer, we talked about, you know, your 20 years anniversary, which is this month, and my 10 year anniversary of this show, which is next month. You know, and I'm going to ask you this honestly, because I'll be honest with our listeners and everything else. I've really this year have looked at it and said, you know what? I think it's run its course. I think it's time to call it. But yet there's something inside of me that's not doing it, that's not really saying it's really that time. And I guess I'll really know. But have you had that throughout the course of your career that you say, you know what, this has been great, but I think it's time?
Well, sometimes when January rolls around and I've been on the road for 3.5, 4 straight months and getting up at 4 or 5 o'clock to go hunting, I think I can't do this anymore or don't want to. But, you know, Durand, honestly, I've been very blessed, and I don't take it for granted that I've had this opportunity, but it's still fun when I get to the point where bow hunting isn't fun anymore, where it starts jeopardizing that feeling. And I'm so passionate about the sport, and I love it so much that if it ever gets to the point where it's jeopardizing those feelings and those thoughts, I will step away. I'll pump gas or something just to still bow hunt and enjoy it. But you know, I'm getting older and such, and I'm still having fun. And every time we go on a different hunt, it's like a new opening day. And as long as it's still fun and such, I'll continue on. But there'll have to be a point here, you know, at some point where I have to think about it. But again, I'm still having fun, and the viewers seem to still enjoy it. So I'm going to still be out there giving it my best.
Yeah, and I appreciate your honesty on that, too. Like I said, this has been a tough year for me. And I think, too, it's because things have been so busy in a personal life that everything else has kind of had to take a back seat to it.
Sure, you're getting married in
a couple of weeks. And you know what? I'll have 10 days in Alaska to think about, you know, what I want to do, which I'm looking forward to. I told Sarah that's the only way I'll ever get on a cruise is if it's Alaska, and all of a sudden, hey, that's where we're going. Oh, okay.
Nice.
So, yeah, I won't be hunting. But I will be doing some fishing of some sort. But you know, it's just knowing you as long as I have and as well as I have, I knew I'd get an honest answer. So, and I appreciate that. Now, let's turn towards back to the conversation of bow hunting this year. There will be some new bow hunters out there. There will be some new people trying the bow season for the first time because we have crossbows now here in Michigan. Some tips of being as minimal intrusiveness as possible. As you know, how do we go in and get out quick, set up stands? You know, what are some of the rules that Tom Nelson follows for getting in and staying scent free?
Oh, excellent question, Grant, and a subject I actually enjoy talking about because I watch people every year make lots and lots of mistakes and fail miserably in their efforts to hang stands or scout or, you know, any of the above. One of the biggest mistakes, of course, is tromping around in your hunting area the week prior to bow season or the day prior, or, you know, hanging tree stands the day before or week before. And what you're, you know, basically doing is educating your local deer herd. And I always I've used this term on your show. You know, I'd like to hold a surprise party for them. So when I'm in that tree stand for the first time, they don't have a clue that I'm even in the same zip code. So scouting smart, you know, is where it all starts, which is, again, not spending any more time than you have to in the deer woods as far as before season. You know, scout early. I like to prep everything, actually, as soon as the snow melts and get in there and do my scouting there, then and there, and if I have to move anything or trim shooting lanes. But it definitely is not too late to do any of that. You know, get out now, albeit warm. Get out there, trim shooting lanes. Get out there and look, do your scouting. If you can't hang a tree stand and leave it this time of year, at least go in and clear out shooting lanes, prep the tree so that when you do decide to hunt it this fall, you can go in there with minimal intrusion trim away anything on the path that you walk in and out that you might rub against and leave scent. Get that done now. Going in and lopping off limbs and such and leaving them around there, all you're doing is alerting the deer. You know, those deer know the woods inside and out. It'd be like coming into your house and seeing your couch or furniture rearranged, and you're going to go on alert, hey, what's going on here? And the same with the deer. They're not stupid at all. So get everything done early. Give it plenty of time to calm down. And that's why trail cameras are important. You know, and go in only once a week and check them. Check them in the middle of the day. I do a lot of my scouting, what I call low-impact scouting, where I'm actually in my truck. My wife and I do it all the time. Air conditioners go in, got a bottle of water, and I'm using my optics from the road, from behind the barn down the farm lane, you know, watching deer, seeing where they're coming out, where they're exiting, and entering fields, and marking that, though, you know, taking notes. Okay, they need to hang a stand here or there. Well, that's a good buck. But by doing that, I'm not leaving scent out in the woods or behind, or spooking deer when I'm moving through the woods or on a quad going down the woods, through the middle of the woods or whatever, and alerting deer to my presence. I mean, you can get away with a lot here on year-and-a-half-old deer and such, but it's those old KG does and those mature bucks. They're like a whole different species. They take very little pressure, and they'll, you know, before they'll relocate.
Tom Nelson is our guest here on Wild Michigan. Our website, wildmichiganradio.com, being brought to you in part by Lucky Buck Deer Mineral. Now, Tom, let's talk about shooting lanes. To some people, they feel they need to drive the tractor down the middle and make a big path. That's not the case.
No. You know, all you need is a lane or a hole that you can shoot through to certain designated areas, and you need, you know, you want to make sure you leave enough cover so that you are hidden up if you're hunting from a tree stand, that you have some branches and leaves that are going to hide you up there, so you're not visible like a sitting on the side of a telephone pole. You need that cover. You know, these whitetail deer, especially in Michigan, are the sharpest whitetails I've hunted in any state, so you need to have some cover left. But look at, okay, this runway over here is 20 yards. I'm going to clear a shooting lane to this runway. And then I'm going to have one on the backside over to this runway or to this spot. But just choose a few spots. Clip any little branches, limbs that might be in the way, and always check with a landowner before you do any of that if you're not on your own property. Make sure that it's okay with the landowner that you've cut this tree or this limb or whatever. And then get that done early. Take that brush, anything you cut, haul it a ways away. And if I'm cutting some small saplings that are growing from the ground, I'll actually take dirt, mud, whatever, and that shiny bright spot where I cut that tree at ground level, I'll try to hide that as best I can, but get it done early. But don't overdo it on your shooting lanes. It's oftentimes one of the biggest mistakes people make. Like you said, they want a shooting lane they can drive a truck through, and that doesn't work.
That's my dad.
It's a lot of people.
I'm trying to teach him. I'm still trying to teach him, and someday, you know, if I get to buy that property from him, then I'll do things a little differently. But right now, I just kind of smile and smile.
Yeah, common mistake. I see it a lot.
All right, Tom Nelson, congratulations on 20 years. Safe travels, man. As always, thank you so much for joining us here on Wild Michigan.
Thank you, Duran. Always a pleasure, my friend.
Absolutely. It's Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez on the Michigan Talk Network.
Send your suggestions, comments, or questions to us here via email at outdoormailbag@gmail.com. Now, back to Wild Michigan.
Turn the quiet up. Turn the noise down. Let this old world just spin around.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I am Duran Martinez, your host all over the Great Lakes State on the Michigan Talk Network. Very, very happy to have you here as we make our way to the middle of August. Things are very hot outside. I'm very lethargic. Don't want to do a show, but I'm doing a show anyway. Because we have people we have to make happy, like our friends at Lucky Buck and Dart and Archery. Great folks all the way around. Very happy to have them on board here as we enter our 10th year. And that means for 10 years, we've been talking to Lance Valentine from Walleye 101 here on the show. Lance, it's really hot. It's really just, look, I don't mean to, you know, go on and beat a dead horse here, but I mean, how is that affecting fishing? Are they going deeper, especially someplace like Saginaw Bay? That's not really that deep to begin with.
You know, it's the time of year when you just kind of go, I'm glad I make a living in this industry because, you know, we're just now starting. You know, I've worked a couple dealer shows for my boat sponsors, and, you know, we're getting ready to head on the road and do some stuff with Motor Guide. And it's a great time of year if you make a living in this industry because you have to be on the road doing shows, and that's actually good because the walleye fishing kind of goes in the tank, so it kind of works out pretty good. But you know, we've still been catching fish up on the bay. We're fishing very, very shallow and very, very fast. And basically in the summertime, you've got two options for walleye fishing. Basically, what you have to do is, you know, basically stay out of the middle. Is kind of how we describe when we do a seminar on late summer walleye fishing. And you know, you want to do one of two things. You either want to be in deeper, colder water, or you want to be in really shallow water with lots of cover. That 10 to 20 foot range really is useless this time of year. That kind of that middle depth is no good. And the same thing when you put your bait. You either want your bait high in the water column where fish are aggressive and they see something go by and they're just going to go grab it. Because remember, the bay fish in the lake, shad, emerald shiners, elwise, yeah, those type of bait. Those types of bait feed on plankton, and plankton's on the surface of the water, so that's where those bait fish are. They're up there high, and they move fairly quick. So you want to run your baits high and fast, or you want to run your baits extremely slow and right, you know, within 2 or 3 feet of the bottom. So that middle part of the depth range when you're looking for fish is no good, shallower than 10, deeper than 20, 25, 30. And when you're putting your baits in the water, you want them in the top 5, 6 feet of the water column with the bottom 3, 4 feet. We kind of teach, you know, get rid of the middle. Forget the middle this time of year. But shallow, go deep. Run your baits high and fast or low and slow. Forget about middle speeds. Forget about middle depth. Just kind of one of those two options, whichever fits best for your fish, you know, your body of water, and you're going to start catching some walleye.
Lance Valentine, our guest here on Wild Michigan. Lance, you really take the human equation out of it because as a human, I would think, you know, maybe the middle, you know, where there's an option, but that's going out the window completely.
Yeah, you know, it's you got to remember, right? Right now, we got a lot of things happening this time, and I'm glad you had this conversation. This is something I absolutely love to talk about because guys get frustrated this time of year, and you got to remember, right now we have a couple things happening. Number one, our bait fish populations are at the highest they're going to be all year. Everything is hatched. Everything's maturing. There's more bait in the water right now than there ever was before or going to be after. And one of the things I see a lot on the Facebook page and on the internet is guys go, well, you know, fish don't feed a lot in the summer. I'm like, okay, let's go back to ninth grade biology. Fish are cold-blooded creatures. The warmer it gets, the more they have to feed, the more food they have to eat because the faster they digest. So fish are feeding more often this time of year than any other time of the year. The problem is they do it in short spurts because there's so much bait. They don't have to go chase bait. They can go eat anytime they want. So they're making these short little 10, 15-minute feeding forays that if you're not there, you're not going to catch them. And they're in smaller groups right now, right? So these fish can go over here, and there's a school of shiners, and there's 50 walleye, and there's a school of elwise, and there's 50 walleye, and there's some perch in the weeds, and there's 50 walleye. These fish are in smaller, tighter groups just chasing a single pot of bait all around, and they eat whenever they want to. But the problem with us as fishermen is we got a couple problems. Number one, these fish are not actively, aggressively feeding very often. Again, stay out of the middle. So fish are in one or two things this time of year. They're very, very rarely in neutral. And neutral is a mode that fish are not aggressively feeding, but we can trigger them to bite. They hardly ever do that in the summertime. They're either active where they're aggressively feeding, they're chasing bait, they're filling their guts, or they're negative where they're on the bottom, they're resting, they're digesting. There is no in-between. So we have to move a lot. That's why I personally prefer to go fast this time of year. I'm covering water. I may go 20 minutes without a fish, 30 minutes without a fish, 40 minutes without a fish. All of a sudden, in 10 minutes, I catch four. And then I go another 45 minutes without nothing. All of a sudden, I catch three in 10 minutes. That's late summer fishing. You just got to keep moving, get your baits above the fish, give them something that they have to go bite. I'm on the fast side as opposed to, you can tell by the way I'm talking, I'm not a slow down and go slow guy. I am a go fast and make fish bite guy. And if you do that right, over 5-6 hours of fishing, it's a rare day that we don't end up with our 15, 18 fish. So it's changing your tactics, understanding how the fish are relating to their environment, how the bait fish are. There's a lot of bait fish around. Fish don't have to bite a lure. They're not hungry because they can eat anytime they want. So those all add up to bad fishing. So we have to take advantage of fish being stupid, and that is going fast, making fish that are aggressive bite our bait because they don't take the time to look at it because we're going by them at 2.5-3 miles an hour.
Now, speaking with Lance Valentine from Walleye 101 here on Wild Michigan, I'm Duran Martinez. Lance, you make me think when I hear you talk about that, the fact that there's so much food out there, that maybe the trigger, maybe triggering their lateral line, getting them kind of angry is going to be the key. Now, I'm thinking crawler harnesses with big blades, or maybe a bait with a rattle and bright colors.
You are thinking exactly right, right? Colors that you would never put in the water. You know, fire tiger is a favorite this time of year. Bright purples, bright green. I run a lot of solid metallic crankbait, solid purple metallic, solid red metallic, solid blue metallic. Just flash, 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 flash. And you hit something that guys have not paid attention to. We did a couple seminars this year. We'll be doing them again and have them running on DVD in January. We're talking about sound. Low frequency sound, one or two single big rattles in a bait, that thud, 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 thud. That's the sound the fish feel through a lateral line, and they can feel that from 80, 90, 100 feet away. They know something's coming. It's not that non-aggressive, you know, lots of small BBs are here, you know, that high frequency sound. That's irrelevant. Fish can really only hear that with their inner ear 10, 15 feet away. You want that low thud, 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 thud in your spread, so fish know from 100 feet away something's coming. It's coming, it's fast, it rattles, it makes a lot of noise, it makes a lot of flash. I don't know what it is, but I want to go get it. That's what we're trying to appeal to. We're trying to appeal to their predatory instinct, not getting them to eat, getting them to bite, two entirely different things.
You know, and again, this has been 10 years of listening. 10 years of not knowing what the heck I'm doing whatsoever to walleye, to now I can go on a charter boat and say, this is why we're doing this, or actually help in the process. Man, I've learned a lot, and I continue to learn. And I think that really kind of excites me when I do this show, because as I told Tom Nelson, somebody else that's been there from the very beginning on this show, as a mentor to me in the world of bow hunting, that, you know, I was thinking earlier this year, you know, and even recently, that, you know, I've done this for 10 years and, you know, maybe it's just me, maybe it's just kind of run its course. But when I have conversations like this, when I get something right, or I actually think about something, maybe I think I'm not done. You know, maybe, well, I think that we need this more.
The beauty of, you know, and then, again, this is where I get frustrated. And we've talked about this multiple times, right? Most of your listeners probably hunt. You know, and I'm watching guys on, oh, I'm sighting in the bow, and I'm like, dude, you're not going hunting for 3 months. You're already, but that same guy won't take 2 minutes to tune a crankbait.
Right.
Right? So I get frustrated when guys, the fish aren't biting. Well, that's a bunch of crap, because they are biting. You know, the guys who are good charter captains on Saginaw Bay are still catching, you know, we're catching our 5, 6, 8 fish per guy. We're coming in with our, you know, 12, 15, 18, 20 fish every single day. The guys who are fishing, who understand what happens and understand the science of how fish have to react to their prey, how they have to react to their surroundings, how they react to sound, how that triggers a bite at certain times of year, how low frequency is better than high frequency at certain times of year.
All right, hang on.
You can catch fish.
All right, Lance Valentine joining us here on Wild Michigan.
You can join us on Facebook or listen to podcasts, all from our website at wildmichiganradio.com. Now, back to Duran Martinez and Wild Michigan.
Cross the line at an altitude time, Interstate 94 more miles through the Great Lakes State. Turn it up so the bus ain't late. Another night in Michigan.
Welcome back to Wild Michigan. I'm Duran Martinez, and thanks to our friends at miguideservice.com. Looking forward to doing some duck hunting with those guys when they get back from Alaska, and cannot wait to hit Alaska myself. Also want to thank Nate DeShong. Nate DeShong is a longtime friend of ours. Nate DeShong Photography is his new gig. And he's going to be doing my wedding, so I want to say thanks to Nate. And you can pick up a link to his page on my page, wildmichiganradio.com. And you know, Lance, I think when I get get into these ruts, so to speak, you know, of like, you know, with this weather especially, it's been very difficult to really think about anything. I've turned to the two people I probably learned the most from in regards to bow hunting and in regards to walleye fishing is you and Tom Nelson. And, you know, again, it triggered me just as to how much fun I've had learning over the course of this 10 years, even though I haven't really had the opportunity to apply it. I've you know, when I do get out, it does make a lot more sense, and it makes the whole trip so much more enjoyable. I want to talk real quickly. I mean, you talk about tuning your crankbaits, but I want to talk about a crawler harness, because almost, I mean, everybody knows how to use a crawler harness, but there are small intricacies on a crawler harness that we may or may not be missing, because some people build their own. The clasp bead blade issue.
You know, I am a big believer in, from my trout fishing days, I've applied this to my walleye fishing, you know, match the hatch, right? So as you look at, the biggest thing guys don't pay attention to in fishing is they have no clue what kind of bait fish are in the bite of water they're fishing, or what kind of bait fish are in the spot they're fishing. And it absolutely drives me nuts. Like I said, you know, we got guys out right now with, you know, cutting shooting lanes and doing this. And this guy, I'm like, dude, spend 5 minutes to figure out what kind of bait lives in your lake, and your catch of fish, period, will increase 100-fold. So what I like to do is I like to match what I'm doing with my presentation to match the kind of bait the fish are eating. So as we get closer to the bottom, remember, as we get closer to the bottom, bait fish have a tendency to get longer and skinnier. We're dealing with, you know, we're dealing with gobies, we're dealing with perch, we're dealing with fish that have a tendency to have a little bit longer body shape, right? So we want to fish a little bit longer blades. We want to fish more willow leaf, more Indiana blades. If we're fishing gobies, a longer blade but a little fatter profile. If we're fishing around the weeds, around perch, around the bottom where there's perch, we want to fish a long skinny blade, like a willow leaf. We get up to the top of the water column where the fish are feeding on shad and alewives and shiners, these shorter, fatter style baits. You know, shiners are kind of a cross. They're kind of that. They're kind of, yeah, a little bit of depth to them, but they're long, so they're not. They're kind of a hybrid. So, you know, you're into an Indiana blade or a Colorado blade where you're fishing where there's shad and alewives, the top part of the water column. You definitely want to go to a Colorado blade, because that Colorado blade has a slower turn, makes more of a thump. That's what a big, heavier, more thick bait fish makes going through the water. A short or a long skinny bait fish, like a smelt or a long perch or a goby, they make very little noise going through the water because they don't move a lot of water because their body is extremely streamlined, just like a shiner. So you want to fish a blade that doesn't make as much vibration, has more flash, less vibration. So as you look at your spinner blade selection, it shouldn't be, oh my God, I've got 75,000 custom colors in Colorado, number 6, but I don't have a number 5 or a number 4, and I don't have any willow leaf. That's absolutely crazy. You know, you're better off to stick to, you know, 5 or 6 basic colors, you know, a couple silvers, a couple golds, 1 or 2 coppers, and, you know, the key colors on the front, you know, orange, chartreuse, purple, red, orange, pink, you know, those types of colors for walleye. That's really all you need, and catch walleyes any place you ever want to go. And you're better off to have different shapes. You need Colorado 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You need Indiana's 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. You need willows 4, 5, 6, 7. You need a blade that looks like the bait the fish are feeding on. It creates the right vibration, the right flash profile, and it makes it looks right going past the fish. Pay attention to what kind of bait fish the fish are feeding on. Match your presentation. I don't care if it's crankbait, spoons, or spinners. Match the presentation to match the bait fish size and shape. You're going to catch a lot more fish every day.
Yeah, it won't look foreign to them. You know, like you said, it's just kind of, you know, putting what's there, but adding to their aggressive nature. I mean, they are predators, so I think making them angry is half the battle.
Well, here's how I describe it, right? Let's say I invited you over to a barbecue. We're gonna have a little party at my house, and I tell you on the invitation, I'm going to be serving two types of meat. I'm going to be serving an 8-ounce filet mignon, and I'm going to be serving ballpark frank. Okay, and what I do is I go to my butcher friend, I go, here's what I want you to do. I want you to take all this filet, this top-grade filet, I want you to chop it up, I want you to put it in the casing and make it look like a hot dog. So he does that. And I said, here's what I want you to do. I want you to take all that hot dog meat, chop it up, and I want you to form it into an 8-ounce patty that looks like a hockey puck. Okay, and you come to my barbecue, and on the table I've got these long, skinny sausage-looking things in a bun, and I've got these little 8-ounce hockey pucks on a plate, and you go, man, I can't wait to get me a filet. Which one are you going to go grab?
Well, the obvious one, the one that looks good.
You have no idea that that's chopped up pig feet and hot dog meat because it actually looks like it is the right thing. That's
right.
Exactly the same way fish are. If they're feeding on 7-inch long smelt, you're not going to catch them on a short, fat hottentot. If they're feeding on young of the year shad, which are 2 inches long or short and fat, and they move really aggressive across the water, you're not going to catch them on a size 13 Rapala. You have to have your presentation look like the bait fish that the fish are feeding on, where and when you're fishing.
Right on. Lance Valentine from Walleye 101 joining us here, giving us a little common sense for the walleye fishing, you know, and it goes a long, long way. It really does.
You got me so fired up right now, dude. I'm not even sitting down. I'm walking around my office. I am pacing in my office.
You know what? I'm glad. See, this is what makes me happy, is I'm making you think now.
you have me pacing in my office.
Well, good, because I know on the 27th, you guys, the 27th, 28th, you've got a big event coming up. It's the Fishing Science Conference. It's going to happen at the Crown Plaza Novi, and you can get all of this kind of information firsthand. You can watch Lance pace in person. You know, and he does, too. I mean, when you get him fired up like that, trust me, I know he's pacing.
This is exactly the stuff we're going to talk about. We're going to talk about walleye biology, how they hear, how they see, how they react to conditions, what they need in the springtime, and how they react to differences in temperature and weather and wintertime, how they react differently in the spring. We're going to talk about how they move around the lake. We're going to talk about chasing summertime walleye on deep structure, how to find the right deep structure, how to identify it, and how to fish it. We're going to talk about UV. Does UV make a difference? Yes or no? We got a guy who's been studying UV for about 5 years, Ali Shakur. He's going to be there doing seminars. We're going to talk about the bait fish. We're going to talk about the predator-prey relationship. How do fish react? Will they go in water too cold, too deep, too shallow, too warm if the right type of bait is there? We're going to talk about how bait moves fish, how wind and current moves fish and relocates them. We're going to talk about precision trolling, how to get your baits to the right depth and know they're at the right depth, and some really cool things that our buddy Mark Romanek has learned over the last couple of years that he is actually saving to share for the first time in public with our group at the science conference, the 27th and 28th of August. So we've got some really, really cool things going on. If you want the kind of information we just talked about, if you want to become a better fisherman, if you understand hunting, understand that you have to understand habitat and food and where fish or where game animals rest and where they eat and where they go do their thing. If you understand that and you want to apply that to your fishing and you become a better fisherman, the science conference is going to cover all of that and a whole lot more over 2 days.
Yeah, it's very important. I mean, look, my friend Ron Spensley has been digging your seminars for a lot of years. And, you know, I go out with Ron, and he is a prime example of a great student because he soaks all this information in. And we have a lot of great fun out there. You know, I mean, he's just a sponge.
And we spent lots of years teaching, you know, the what and, you know, the how. And, you know, we spent a lot of years teaching and kind of putting some of the stuff into layman's terms. But this is going to be – actually, I'll tell you how hardcore this is. I'm not even going to be one of the speakers. I'm going to be the MC and the moderator. So the guys we're bringing in are heavy, heavy hitters. We have a DNR biologist from Ohio, Travis Hartman, who has studied – the movements of walleye and Lake Erie and bait over the last 15 years. Ali Shakur has a doctorate in fisheries and an MBA in fishery and is getting his doctorate in fisheries from Wayne State University. And he's doing a lot of study on how fish see, how fish hear, how they react, and how they move through deep water, even in the springtime. So he's done a lot of studies on deep water walleye that spend their time in deep water, how they move and how they relate to structure. Mark Romanek, obviously a lot of guys know Mark Romanek, saying the precision trolling information. Mark's going to come and talk about the science behind that and how it works and how line diameter affects how deep and how different your lures actually run. He's going to talk about a lot about lead core and some things that we're getting into that we don't understand that he's been underwater doing the diving and actually seeing underwater. So they're going to talk. I'm going to moderate, wrap it up, and put every seminar into a way that guys can understand, take their fish, and I'm going to let the experts talk. I'm going to sit back and I'm going to learn that weekend.
All right. Lance Valentine, walleye101.com, teaching fishing on the Facebook. Thank you so much, man. As always, greatly appreciated.
Hey, my pleasure, buddy. Good talking to you.
All right, man. Check him out on our website, wildmichiganradio.com, brought to you by Lucky Buck Deer Mineral and Darton Archery.